As has already been noted, today is a day that celebrates mothers. And there are people who do not have a positive memory of their mother for whatever reason, but the vast majority do. And your mother may have been long gone for a number of years, but my guess is today you've had a pleasant memory already about her. One of the more unpleasant things that we have in youth is when our mama tells us what to do. We don't like that too well growing up. But yet when we get older, we begin to realize that there was a reason behind all of this. And though we may have thought we would not in any way remember these things, we can hear her words many times still telling us the right way to go. There is an unnamed mother's speech recorded at the end of the book of Proverbs. In Proverbs 31, she's simply introduced as the mother of King Lemuel, which begs a question no one can answer, and that is, who is King Lemuel? If you'd like to Google that, you can find all kinds of results for it. But the simple fact is, God didn't really care to tell us about who this king is. He simply said, I want you to hear what his mother has to say. And so this morning, I want us to explore that, to look at her words, though very brief, some very powerful ideas that she presents. Before we get into that, though, let's see how this fits into the book of Proverbs. Proverbs, sometimes, if we're not careful, we think is just this mix of things that really has no real structure to it. That's not the case. The book of Proverbs is written very much like a wise parent teaching a child. And you can see that at the introduction of the book. First seven chapters are going to begin something like, son, listen to what I'm saying. These words are for you. And the father will explore all kinds of ideas as though these speeches are given directly to a son who perhaps is about ready to go out from his father's household. And so as you open the book of Proverbs, there's this prologue, and then those speeches begin. Then when you come to the end of the book of Proverbs, there's a speech here presented by a mother, then followed by an epilogue. And so somewhat then of bookends, you've got the wise father and the wise mother who's teaching their children, in particular within the book, their sons, how they need to behave themselves. Though that message certainly is not restricted just to the sons in the family, but to daughters as well. Notice how this fits with the book of Proverbs. Between these two sections, we've got passages such as this: hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching. And then a little bit later on in chapter 6 and verse 20, my son, keep your father's commandment and forsake not your mother's teaching. So here's how wisdom is gained, according to the writer. Listen to what your father tells you. Listen to what your mother tells you. If these two individuals are speaking wisdom to you, you need to pay attention. And I guess if we wanted to center all of this on one theme, we could say it's wisely understanding that self-control is essential for being pleasing to God. It's not the idea of self-control sometimes that we think about today, where we consider it all about what we're going to give up. It's more of the idea that we're getting self out of the way. We're not mixing the wisdom of God with all of our ideas of success. And so as these wise, godly parents are teaching their children what needs to be done, we're learning the wisdom that God has wanted for mankind since the very dawn of creation. So with that said, let's take a look at what the mother says here beginning in verse 2. She says, what are you doing, my son? What are you doing, son of my womb? What are you doing, son of my vows? That sounds familiar, doesn't it, to anybody who has boys? What are you doing? And so the mother then, after introducing that, begins with her first lesson. She says in verse 3, do not give your strength to women, your ways to those who destroy kings. The mother begins by looking at her royal son and saying, there's some things I know that can happen that will destroy you. And I get the suspicion that this royal mother knew exactly what a royal harem could do to a son. And you and I know that also, don't we? not because we still have those experiences today, but because God has recorded it for us. And so as we listen to these words, it's hard not to think about Solomon, who's responsible for many of the Proverbs within this book, either saying or recording them, to think about what women did to him. Listen to what God tells us. God says in 1 Kings chapter 11, Solomon had 700 wives who were princesses and 300 concubines. Now I want you to note how this kind of breaks in half. And his wives turned his heart. For when Solomon was old, his wives turned away his heart after other gods. And his heart was not wholly true to the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. You listen to that, and it almost makes it sound like it's the wives' fault, right? Well, it was. They were sinning also. They were doing wrong, but God is not pinning the blame totally on them. God says that the wives were producing these temptations, but here, the wisest man on the face of the earth willingly took those temptations and ran with them. And so he then says in the latter part of this, for Solomon went after Ashtaroth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. So Solomon did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and did not follow the Lord as David his father had done. Then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, and for Molech, the abomination of the Ammonites, on the mountain of east of Jerusalem. And so he did for all his foreign wives who made offerings and sacrifices to their gods. Did you catch all of the Solomon dids in there and Solomon built? Solomon did what was evil. Solomon built the high places. Solomon's going against God. And maybe this royal mother knew that story. And as she thinks about her son, she's saying to him, "Don't let that happen to you. To destroy you as king." And let's think about that language for just a minute. The word destroy here is the words blot out. And the reason I bring that out, not because there's a great distinction in their meaning, but to take us back to the time of the flood. And as God is upset with mankind for giving himself over to wickedness, God says, "I'm going to allow a flood to come and to blot you out." And that particular Hebrew word is going to be clustered there in Genesis 6 through 9 as God is saying, here's what happens when you allow sin to reign over you. And this mother is telling her son, this is what happens when you allow your passions to control you. You'll destroy yourself as king. But here's the thing. This is recorded for you and me. And so you don't have to be a king to take this motherly advice. It's not simply for someone who's royalty. This is advice for parents in teaching their kids, no matter if the kids are royalty or paupers. This is how you're going to be successful in life. And to know that, we can go back to the words of the father at the beginning of the book. His words are going to sound remarkably similar to this wise mother as he says this. After he's given this long speech on the dangers of adultery, he says, with much seductive speech, she persuades him. With her smooth talk, she compels him. Now listen to this and see if it doesn't ring with what the mother that we just read stated. All at once, he follows her as an ox goes to the slaughter. Or as a stag is caught fast till an arrow pierces its liver. As a bird rushes into the snare, he does not know that it will cost him his life. He does not know that in following this kind of lifestyle, it's going to blot him out. And so the father says, sons, listen to me. Be attentive to the words of my mouth. Let not your heart turn aside to her ways. It's exactly what Solomon did. All of these political marriages he made, perhaps he said, they won't impact me. God says they absolutely impacted him. And so what happens? The father says, do not stray into her paths, for many a victim she has laid low, and all her slain are a mighty throng. Her house is the way to Sheol, going down to the chambers of death. That's the words of the wise father and mother. So what do you and I learn from this? we learn that wise parents are going to teach their children how to recognize the right kind of attitude. A wise mother, as we have in King Lemuel's mother, is going to say to a son or a daughter, when you're looking for the one with whom you want to have the relationship for the rest of your life in marriage, you make sure that you're seeing the right attitude in that person. How is that done? Well, the Bible's really helpful with that. There's a lot of reasons the book of Ruth is recorded. But surely one of those reasons is because as we look at Ruth and later in the book at Boaz, we are seeing here people who are totally selfless, who are interested in the well-being of others. Ruth, who's willing to absolutely go against everything she was raised with, to go with her former mother-in-law, to do everything for her. Boaz, an older man, but yet he's concerned about Ruth and later Naomi as well. Those are the kinds of things we can use to teach our children what to look for. Someone who is simply like that adulterous person that the father describes does not have our interest in mind. It's also the times when fathers and sons need to have talks. That's typically a pretty awkward thing. Most fathers communicate about as well as their sons do, so you're already starting out in negative territory. But nonetheless, it's a good thing. Mothers and daughters may have a similar kind of awkwardness at times, but yet, who do you want your kids hearing these things from? That's the question. Now, let me make it a little bit more awkward. Sometimes it's really good for, as in the case of King Lemuel, for a mother to talk to her son. And conversely, for a father to talk to a daughter, so that you can begin to see what's in the minds of the folks on the other side of the fence. So that mothers can tell their sons certain things that a woman knows better than her husband does. Or a father can tell his daughter certain things that he's going to know better than her mother does. And there are so many issues like this where the opposite gender parents can have a remarkable influence simply by taking the time to talk. I believe that's one of the valuable lessons that we're learning from this section of wisdom in the book of Proverbs. And so with all of that considered, parents have an extremely important responsibility to teach their children how to control their passions. The passions are going to be there. It's a natural thing. But wisdom is saying those who are in the know, the wise mother, the wise father, are helping their kids to learn how to appropriately handle these things. I don't think any of us are in the dark on this point, are we? Sexual temptation is rampant around us. You can't even drive down the road without billboards presenting things that you don't want your little children's eyes looking at, but there they are. And you broaden it out for there. We need to understand that. And we also need to understand that while Bible classes and sermons are good about this, that's not going to be enough to counter all of this that they're surrounded with. We want good, strong Bible teachers helping our young people. We want preaching that's pointing out the dangers. But the front lines of this are for the parents. And that's why this king's best advisor was his mother, who said, you need to make sure that you're staying away from these things. These parental conversations are absolutely essential for making sure that our children are going in the direction that we want. There's King Lemuel's mother's first words of wisdom. Make sure you're not selling out to the other gender who has your interest nowhere in mind. Well, let's look at what she says next. As we continue on down, she says in verse 4, "It is not for kings, O Lemuel, it is not for kings to drink wine, or for rulers to take strong drink, lest they drink and forget what has been decreed and pervert the rights of all the afflicted." She now comes to the second thing that can destroy a king. She says, if you give yourself over to all of these intoxicants, then what's going to happen is your mind is not going to be prepared to rule this people. How many times have we seen rulers who get their people in trouble for this very reason? Because their failure to think soberly and clearly leads to lawlessness and abuse of their citizens. How well that comes out in the account of the death of John the Baptist, doesn't it? Here was a king who had absolutely given himself over to pleasures. And what happens? It leads him into this situation where he's too scared to stand up for the rights of one he knew was righteous. And so this royal mother says, look, your job as king is to take care of folks. And if you are intoxicated, that you're given over to all of these things, you are not going to do your number one job as king. Now, as we consider that, it's all about a loss of control. It's all about giving over to pleasures. Now, the next couple of verses sometimes give us pause. I think we can make sense out of them. But let's see what else she says about this. If you go to verse 6, she says, give strong drink to the one who is perishing, and wine to those in bitter distress. Let them drink and forget their poverty and remember their misery no more. Sometimes we look at this and it's almost like she's condoning drunkenness as long as you're not a king. I can assure you that if we can't figure out exactly what she means, we can for sure figure out that she is not condoning that. Because in the rest of the book, we're going to see this kind of thing condemned. I suspect that this is a bit of irony here. That she's making a point to her son. She says, look, this is how people live who think they've got nothing to live for. This is what they give themselves over for. But look at what you can do. And as we saw in her first piece of advice, this piece of advice also fits within the book of Proverbs. Again, chapter 23, listen to what the Proverbist says. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has strife? Who has complaining? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? We're ready now for the answer. Those who tarry long over wine. Those who try to go after mixed wine. Do not look at wine when it's red. When it sparkles in the cup and goes down smoothly. In the end, it bites like a serpent and stings like an adder. Your eyes will see strange things and your heart utter perverse things. You will be like one who lies down in the midst of the sea, like one who lies on the top of a mast. They struck me, you will say. But I was not hurt. They beat me, but I did not feel it. When shall I awake? I must have another drink. I can assure you King Lemuel's mother is not encouraging anybody to go down that line of thought. But yet here is something that we learn in our youth, isn't it? As she talks to her son, she says, your sobriety is going to be important not only for you, but for lots of other people also. And thus, what do we need to do? First of all, for ourselves, and then for our children, we're teaching the danger of things that impair sensible thinking. Anytime I make this point, my mind almost automatically goes to 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8. Where the Apostle Peter says, be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, seeks at you like a roaring lion. He's prowling about like a roaring lion so that he can devour you. I realize the term sobriety can mean lots of things. It can mean seriousness. But let me ask you this, as I have oftentimes before in sermons. If a lion gets loose in your neighborhood, who do you want hunting it? The guy who's sober or the guy who just kicked back and drank a six-pack? God is saying there is danger when you don't take deadly things seriously. Yet, what does intoxication do? It encourages that very idea. So then, it's important to teach children the dangers, and let me just broaden this out for a moment, of any kind of addiction. Addiction means that you are allowing something to be in control that ought not to be there. And so this certainly could be drug addiction, as in the case with alcohol or other narcotics. But you know, Proverbs also warns about food addiction. Ever thought about that? warns about gluttony, the idea that I just can't wait for my next meal. It's controlling me. Or in more modern times, the addiction to technology. Do you know we've got camps to unaddict people to their cell phones and that kind of thing? Or video addictions. You see, all of these things are putting something else in control of the mind. All of these things are saying there's something much more important than allowing God to hold that point for me. And so parents then do quite well if they deal with this early in their children's lives. And I can assure you, I know firsthand, that can be a battle. That there are times when our kids are wanting those phones or they're wanting those games or that technology, just like the adults do. You go to almost to any store and just take a look back at people standing in line and look at what's going on. We are a nation who is addicted to this kind of thing, and our kids are learning that as we're giving them these things earlier and earlier in life. We need to listen to the wise mother. Don't allow anything, son, that's going to take your mind off of the work that you have to do. And thus, that needs to be the case for us also. Let's look at her third piece of advice here to her son. And I think this may correspond a little bit with what she just said about those who feel like they've got no hope and they're just lost in misery. Verse 8, she says, "Open your mouth for the mute, for the rights of all those who are destitute. Open your mouth, judge righteously, defend the rights of the poor and needy." So many times when we're raising children, it feels like our most common word is no or don't. And it's all of these negative things, and that's how she started out. Don't give your strength to women. Don't let yourself be intoxicated. But here we're seeing something in which she's talking very proactively. Again, as we think about her son as the king, what was his duty? His duty was to take care of the citizens of his kingdom. It wasn't for his pleasure that he's king. He was in that position to take care of his people. And she says, you need to be the mouthpiece for them. For those who have no voice, you're their voice. For those who maybe are in misery and thinking, I just need to drown my life in these intoxicants, she's saying, you show them they've got hope. That's your job as king. And when you open the Bible, one of the themes that is going to hit you when you begin to look for it is how many times God says, my people are responsible for taking care of those in need. You look at the law of Moses and it is all over it. As God spoke to Israel, He says, I want you watching out for the welfare of the widow and the orphan and the stranger and the poor. Those who are most vulnerable in society, He says, I want you looking out for them. And things don't change in the New Testament. Visit the widows and orphans in their affliction. Take care of the poor. Be generous and share. It's a theme that runs through. So next time you start your daily Bible reading, just start marking. Make a little mark in your Bible every time you come across one of those commands, and I think you will be amazed by how many times it's there. So what does that mean then for us? Well, it means that we need to pay attention to what God says. We'll limit it just to the book of Proverbs. Whoever is generous to the poor lends to the Lord. He will repay him for his deed. Whoever has a bountiful eye will be blessed, for he shares his bread with the poor. Whoever oppresses the poor to increase his own wealth or gives to the rich will only come to poverty. God says there is an appropriate way that you use the blessings you've been given, and that's taking care of other people. That's looking out for the needs of others to make sure that they are getting a share of this from you. However, this morning, I want to limit this discussion, as I have the others, to Lemuel's mother's encouragement for parents. One of the best things you can do when your kids are young is to teach them to defend those in need. This is not an easy thing to do. I always hate using the term human nature, but sometimes it just works. human nature tends to make us want to fit with the popular group. We want to be with those who are looked upon as the ones everybody wants to be around, if we can be a part of that circle. But what that means is there's a fair amount of people outside that circle. And if you want to see that in firsthand reality, visit a school and you'll see it. You'll see the popular group. You'll see kind of the quirky group. But then you're going to see a group that's just basically left out of everything. And I will say sometimes that's because there are habits or attitudes that kids in this group exhibit where others just say, I don't want to be around that. So when you talk to your kids, you're putting them on a challenging road. You're saying to that child, you're going to need to be with people that not everybody accepts. Sounds a little bit like Jesus, doesn't it? As he went to the poor and those on the fringes of society. If a child can be taught this, this is the cure for bullying in school. Bullying, by its very nature, is picking out the most vulnerable. Yet, if the most vulnerable are surrounded by this strong network of people who care about them, that's going to end. Isn't that the teaching of the Bible? Were widows bullied? Yes. Orphans bullied? Absolutely. Strangers bullied? For sure. Foreigners? Yes. What if I can teach my child early on, you look out for the needs of those in your circle? What I'm doing is I'm teaching them how to be a caring adult. Those lessons that mama teaches us when we are 5 and 6 and 7 years old will impact us for our life if we'll let them. So then, this kind of teaching is going to help our kids to learn how to become caring adults. And what it's going to mean is this, that you, in godly wisdom, are the influence, and you're filling up that influence so that politics can't shape that attitude. Listen to the news. What's the words we hear about strangers and foreigners, people who are in need? We can hear things like, well, if they just get a job, there's plenty of jobs out there. What about the ones who have mental illness and can't just go out and get a job? What about ones who've never had the skill set to learn to get those abilities? Those are the most vulnerable around us. And if Jesus was living in the 21st century, it would be to these that he would naturally be drawn. Why? Because in their misery, they're looking for what's going to make life have purpose, and that's Jesus Christ. What if I can teach my child early in life to look to be like Jesus in this regard? I'll teach my child how to be a godly, wise man or woman. So then, what this does is fleshes out the command, both for Israel and for us, that you love your neighbor as yourself. And I can assure you that love is always seen in action. It's never a feeling. It's never something that you put on a plaque up on the wall. And it's what you are. You are a person who through your actions loves other people, especially those who are on the fringes. And might I suggest for all of us, this is how children of the King are to behave. This is to describe us, that we are a people who are the voice for those who have no voice and the care for those who do not have those who care for them. King Lemuel's mother sounds like a woman all of us could use in our lives. And I think that's the point. that what God is saying in Proverbs, after he goes through all of those little pithy statements that show about how to demonstrate wisdom in life, he's saying, you be this kind of mother. You be this kind of father. And you're going to train your children, as this good mother did, about serving the Father in heaven. And I hope whether our kids are young or grown or whether we have children or not, we're all paying attention to that. Because the lessons that she taught to her sons are the lessons that we need to hear also. And I hope we're paying attention. Thank you for your good attention this morning. If you've got a godly mother, I can assure you one thing you heard from her, and that is you need to be a Christian. And parents sometimes get a little concerned as kids get up to that age, you know, 12, 13, 14. It's like, when is my child going to make a decision to become a Christian? So I'm not going to contradict your mother here. But I'm going to tell you, don't become a Christian because of her. She wants you to, that's not the reason. The reason you become a Christian is you allow the wisdom of God to direct your life. And God says, if you are wise, you come into my family, and I'll take care of you every step of the way, beginning with washing away your sins in the waters of baptism. That's God's wisdom. And if you're ready this morning to accept that wisdom and to become a Christian, you can do that. You can be that godly influence we're talking about who will be repaid fully when eternity comes. This morning, if you're ready to obey and submit to your Father in heaven, he is willing to extend his eternal love to you. If you need to respond, you can come while we stand and sing.